You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fardis.
The case of Ellen Greenberg, well, they're making some headway, the parents of Ellen anyway. Finally, after many, many years of trying to raise their hands and go, someone can't stab themselves 20 times, including fatal stabbing wounds post-mortem, and continue stabbing themselves. So why was this labeled a suicide? Well, since then, a lot of people have come and gone out of Philadelphia. But finally, we are starting to see some headway going on with possibly more investigation into this case. Joining me to discuss, Eric Fardis, defense attorney. This is one that just, it blows your mind when you just look at the facts of it, how it's been sitting here as a suicide for all those years. And I'm not here to blame anyone or say it was the ex-fiance or whatever. I mean, I don't know. We don't know. But what we do know is that this clearly was not a suicide.
Any reasonable person looking at the facts of this case, 20 self-inflicted stab wounds, are you kidding me? That just strains credulity. It just doesn't, it boggles the mind that anyone can come to the conclusion based on those facts that this was a suicide. Everything indicates to me it wasn't.
The former district attorney, Guy DeAndrea, suggesting that Ellen's death was not a suicide, but a homicide. That's based on forensic investigation. And the court now allowing the Greenberg family to proceed with discovery and depositions, including questioning DeAndrea, who may provide some interesting insights into the original investigation, which has been pretty much just locked and sealed ever since then. What do you think we're going to find out here?
You know, I'm a former district attorney, and what I can tell you is that those folks know a lot more about the case sometimes than is in the case file. There is information that they sometimes have. And so this will be an opportunity to learn what that is. He's going to be under oath, and they're going to be able to question him about why he believes that this was a homicide and not a suicide, and who he talked to and how he came to that conclusion, on what evidence that conclusion is based. And so really interested to see sort of where that discovery goes and what it leads to.
If it leads to them reclassifying this death as a homicide, what does that change in terms of an investigation of this case? Because right now it just sits. If they are able to change that, is that going to then allow detectives to look into this further? I mean, they've been kind of not wanting to do that to begin with, but or was that more of a factor of, because it was just labeled a suicide, they don't have the resources or the permissions granted to investigate it as a homicide? Will that change that if they get that ruling changed?
I think it'll change in a number of ways. One is that this case is very public now. So if that determination changes from suicide to homicide, there's going to be a public uproar about, hey, we need to try to do something about this. I think that's going to compel investigative authorities to look into it as a homicide. But with these cold cases, it's tough, because even though they might now determine that it's a homicide, you still have to find the culprit. And that can be way more difficult, 10, 15 years after the fact.
True. But there is a lot of evidence that does point in a certain direction. You have an attorney relative that comes in and takes all of the computer equipment out of the home the very next day. Lots of evidence just seemingly gone. It wasn't cordoned off as a crime scene. There's evidence that points to the body being moved. I mean, the biggest one to me is just the post-mortem stabbing. I mean, that right there is like, okay, come on. Unusual blood patterns, the door itself, the claims of breaking it down and what actually happened with the door. I don't know. I'm not saying it was that person, but I'm saying there's a lot of things to look at that may put someone in hot water.
Oh, sure. And one thing that we talk about, Tony, is this idea of consciousness of guilt. Mm-hmm. And when you have the attorney coming in the next day and essentially destroying evidence, maybe, or I don't know the exact circumstances, but that's sure what it looks like from an onlooker's perspective. That tells me there's something to hide. And so who was that person protecting? Mm-hmm. These are all questions law enforcement are going to have to try to find answers to.
There's so many questions in this case, so many people that seem to have been overly protected, or I don't know what's going on. I mean, sometimes, you know, just innocent things can look conspiratorial, but I don't know. In this one, this is long overdue. And I'm wondering, I mean, how long would is something like this going to take as they begin doing depositions and investigating this? If you were to, again, look in your crystal ball and to guess, you know, in the next year or two, where do you see this going, just based on the facts that we know right now?
You know, these sort of cold case reopening of older cases, those can be very tough and can proceed at a snail's pace because you're not working from, you know, when the incident happened and being able to talk with fresh witnesses, get information, follow up on leads, that kind of thing. You're starting from scratch 15 years or so later, or 10 to 15 years. And so, you know, I think it's going to go more slowly than people want, but certainly the police are going to be motivated to try to get this community some answers if this does prove to be a homicide.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.